Good evening and welcome to a new podcast. This is a new podcast in our design series. And we're here today with Ben and Kingsley from the Design Conspiracy, who have been really willing and kind enough to help us with our filter design competition. So they came here, accepted our invitation and held a really inspirational conference. Hi guys, thank you very much for accepting to be here.
And let's just say that we also have Cosmin from Akum here.
Yes, and hopefully and shortly we'll also have Radu. But that's another story, we'll get back to that later. So the first question, and I know you have been asked this over and over again, but what is the Design Conspiracy and how did things start up? Because you see, so our podcast is called Doercast, and it's actually about people who do stuff.
The doers.
Doers.
Okay,
of course.
That's good.
And I think it's what you achieved is really great. I've admired it from the first second I heard about it, and we'd like to know how you got here.
And you're please remember to speak up.
It's you're the doers of today. Yeah,
you're the doers of the day. That's why we got you here.
Okay, well, the Design Conspiracy was formed in 2001, so we've been going 6 years.
What?
Before that, there was five of us that went to university together. We graduated from university in 97. We all moved to London and worked in various different jobs, and then probably about as early as 98, 99, decided we ought to do something together. And did various things, worked on various projects, business cards for uncles, websites for friends, that kind of thing. And because we ended up meeting once a month in pubs, that's where the name Conspiracy came from. People used to say, this feels like a conspiracy, what are you doing, what are you up to? That's where the name came from. And then it was in 2001 was when we formally registered the company as a limited company. So that's our birthday. So we've been going since then. There was...
So the tea is here, you know, just so that we're in the tea house,
and the tea is here.
And the tea is here. So
although we registered the company in 2001, only one person was full time. We've never borrowed any money. We've never done anything like that. We've grown organically. So one person was full time, and then two people, and then three people, and so on. And now 2007 finds us with seven people.
So you're adding pretty much one person per year.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what do you need to get? What do you need to do to get into the Design Conspiracy?
Flatter us.
Yeah. Oh.
Good.
You should have told us that from the beginning. I'd have made a better use of our trip.
you know the secret now, how to get in the conspiracy.
Yeah, but then again, you don't have any strategy people inside the agency, do you now?
Not yet, no.
I mean,
I'm good for nothing.
I mean, it's quite difficult to get in because, you know, historically we are, our founders are four designers and a copywriter. So we don't need any more designers, you know, we've got four of them on hand. So, you know, the first real employee was a new business manager. The second one was an account manager.
Yeah.
You know, and going forward, we'll probably need a junior designer or a designer, maybe a receptionist, maybe an office manager, maybe a web designer, something like that, you know, kind of skills that we don't have already, so...
And no PR thingy.
And no strategy.
Absolutely no PR whatsoever.
Yes, I don't agree.
Maybe in the future, maybe planners or strategic people, definitely.
Good.
But never any PR people.
No, if you get planners, they can do anything for you.
Do we drink this without milk?
I can ask for milk, but usually if it comes without milk, then you know you can drink it without milk.
But we can ask for milk, you just have to stay
away.
This is Toblerone.
No, his biscuits, those are his biscuits.
Kingsley ordered a Toblerone, so we're just waiting for that.
I have a question, because you were in Romania here a year ago, in September, for the Napoleon's conference, and you had a very, very nice presentation of your agency's policies and stuff. And I was wondering whether you could speak a bit about that, because I thought it was really nice.
Yeah, and we missed out. We left that out today, didn't we? Because we wanted to talk about the case studies. Okay, so I'll try and remember the seven things we do that no one else does.
Yeah.
I'll try and remember those off the top of my head. Okay, so number one, in no particular order. Number one is that we care about where the money goes. So we bank with a bank called the Cooperative Bank, which is an ethical bank in the UK. So they have an ethical policy. It's not comprehensive, but they won't invest it in companies that deal in conflict diamonds or in arms or things like that. I think oil is okay, but tobacco's not. They've got, you know, various things. Mm-hmm. It's quite sensible. We've always banked with them just purely for that reason. And our accountant sometimes asks us to change the bank, and they're not brilliant by any means, but the ethical policy is still quite important to us, so we stick with that. That's number one. We're part of the thing called the 1% Club, and that means that every year we commit to give 1% of our profit to charity. Last year we gave 5%, which was fantastic. The year before we gave 2.6%. So we're doing quite well on that score. We finish at 4 p.m. on a Friday, just because no one does anything on Friday afternoon, and all the places we worked at, people are just hanging around waiting for 5:30. So we said, okay, forget that. Just, you know, all the clients have gone home. Let's just finish at 4.
Okay.
We have free company fruit, so we order in company fruit, and the idea is that everyone can have five bits of fruit a day, you know, free, because we order something. I think actually someone worked it out that you probably get about 3.5 pieces a day, but anyway, there's a big bowl of fruit delivered, you know, every Monday, which is enough for everyone. So that's 4.
Nice.
5, everyone gets a bonus on their birthday. So when it's your birthday, everyone gets a cash bonus in their wages.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So the
problem is, no, I can give Kingsley his biscuits.
I know the 7th one is we make lists of 7 things, and we do always write in 7 things. And there's the 6th one I'm missing, and that is, don't know, there's 6 thing. Oh. 6 things we did. Can't remember the 7th one.
Now I have another question, because it's a question that has been bugging me all weekend after some conversations I had for weeks with the folks from Orkum. And that's like, how do you handle a small firm which is growing and growing? I mean, and that would be one question for now. Thanks.
That's the sound of Toblerone.
Oh, stop advertising you.
How to handle a small firm that's growing.
Yeah.
And growing.
I think it's difficult, and I think you have to realise that, although there's only 7 of us, a year and a half ago there was 3 of us full-time. So, you know, or just over a year and a half ago there's 3 of us full-time. So we've doubled in a year and a half. And, you know, if you went from 100 people to 200 people, that's the same thing. And that brings different challenges and makes it a very, very different company, you know, a better company, but things are very different. I think you have to realise that. And I think there's only 2 things you can do. One is that everyone has to believe in the same thing. You all have to believe that you're heading in the same direction, everyone, from the founders to the staff. And we'll do, definitely. Everyone believes we're going in the same direction. And the other thing is you have to appreciate that everyone can't do everything. We have to divide up the roles and say... One thing we did early on, which has been brilliant, is that we have this cell structure. So whenever we have a project like employing somebody, or we've just found a new office, or if we were looking for new solicitors or whatever, we split into cells of 2 people.
Yeah.
So our first employee, me and Kingsley, were the cell for the new office. April and Kingsley were the cell, and those 2 people do that, research it, find out about it, present back to the others periodically, but essentially those 2 people make the decision and everyone else has to abide by that, and that stops everyone getting involved with everything, and it just makes it quicker and more efficient, that's a nice, and it's worked really well. It's a nice way of doing things. And we've since found out that Google do something quite similar, except they have cells of 5 people, but they do something similar. So,
yeah.
I think it's defining the roles as well, defining
very,
roles
very
early
important.
On of what you do, what people. And I think it's also when you sat down together, I think it's defining what your roles are and looking at what other people, what your strengths are, and things like that. And I think it's defining that.
Yeah. That kind of brings me to another question, and I think that you've partly already answered it, but anyway, you're telling me that in the beginning you were 5 friends and college students spending a lot of time together. So
yeah.
How do you manage the tension between being friends and colleagues at the same time?
Oh yeah, this is a problem for us.
Because this is a problem for us, and we were thinking how to surpass it, and I'm thinking that you might be telling us something about it, giving us some advice.
Okay. Well, I don't think you do surpass it, to be honest.
No, there isn't an answer.
I think you kind of like because we were like five friends and everything like that. But then you meet, you know, your wife or anything, everything like that, and then you have a separate life, to be honest. You do sort of go your separate ways. But I think you have this understanding that you had from the very beginning, you know.
And
I think that's just like in life, really.
Yeah.
Imagine five school friends and they got married and they had kids and blah, blah, blah. You still remain friends because you know how each other ticks.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like blood, brother and sister. You know, you can have your fiercest arguments with your brother or sister, but you always get back together at the end. And it's kind of like that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you have huge arguments, but you always come back to each other. And I also think when you work together as close as we have done, as long as we have done, then you respect that person, you know, a hell of a lot more. And it's kind of like it's a bit like a football team. So you might hate the striker in your team, but you wouldn't want any other striker. Do you know what I mean? Or
yes.
Something like
yeah.
that. It's kind of like you want those guys on your team, kind of thing.
How about the design arena in the UK? Because I was thinking, I mean, you were telling us today at the conferences that you are in the top 5%
by turnover,
and I don't know how is the design arena divided in the UK. Are there big agencies, small agencies, middle agencies?
Well, I think the small percentage would be big agencies.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of like a top down, and it's. Like I say, the small agencies would be the majority. The big agencies would be the minority, and then there's the ones in the middle. But the small agencies, the one man bands, make up the vast majority of graphic design.
Yeah, almost like 90% would be one, two, three man bands.
Yeah,
the people like Interbrand, Enterprise IG, Wolf Hollins, people like that would be 1%, and then people like us, so anything from kind of 5. Members of staff to say 25 is about 5%.
So the competition is pretty tough when you're a small agency. How do you get in front, like you did?
Yeah.
Very tough.
When you're a small band, when it's just you're just the 1% or the 90%.
No, when you're like you.
Oh, how do you get in front?
Yeah,
with those.
So the competition is very tough.
Brilliant word.
Passion.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
there's all those
things. Yeah.
There's all those things, and then there's like word of mouth and speaking to people and networking. And
yeah. So how do you promote yourselves, by the way? The blog, the website.
Business card is fantastic.
Yeah, tell us about
it.
Business
they
cards,
are really
please.
Great.
Yeah,
please.
Everybody's a sucker for them. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
have you got some on hand, by the way?
No, we've
given them all
out.
They're all like, give
I noticed they
no,
all
explain how
one.
Those business
I noticed they
are.
All disappeared.
Yeah, yeah. We've got some more at the hotel. I'll give you the rest.
Oh, perfect. Well, I'm going to take them.
And then there's like...
They're heat sensitive.
The business cards are heat sensitive.
I think there's two aspects to promoting yourself. One is, you know, the sales. You need to make sales to pay the rent. And one is... the kind of opinion of you amongst your peers and amongst students and things like that. And we now employ a new business manager, Rebecca,
mm-hmm.
which allows her to manage the sales aspect of things.
Yeah.
And not just
to focus on the design.
Yeah, not just
yeah,
to get
yeah.
sales in, but to handle sales calls when they come in
yeah.
or to handle inquiries like that. And that allows us as founders to follow up more on things like speaking at conferences, or you know, it's nice to, as we're a little bit bigger, when students say, can you come and give a talk at our college, it's nice to have the time to say yes
yeah.
we can, that kind of thing, you know. But that all helps promote you, and or write articles for magazines or for
yeah.
other websites or things like that, you know. That all kind of helps. And just I think to be, I mean, like you guys are definitely, just to be very active in your industry,
mm-hmm.
you know, you meet so many designers who
yeah raise your
like,
profile
yeah,
within
I don't want to talk to that magazine, I don't want to talk to this, you know, just be involved in the industry, care about
yeah,
what's
yeah,
happening
yeah.
Talk, there's so many, you know, the font association, the this association, the that association, you know, talk to all these guys and just be involved, so that people know you. And, you know, and you can't do enough really, promotion, talking to people and socialising with other people. That kind of thing. But I mean, you guys do loads of that already.
Thank you. So how is it like to be a designer after all? Because you've kept on saying stuff like designers are wankers, and you spoke about the design disease a lot.
Yeah, can I actually ask you, you know, about, I mean, first of all, how did you, I just read on your blog that you realized when you were 13, you know, that's you wanted to be a graphic designer. You know, how did you get to that? You know, how did this realization come?
Okay, that's from the design disease article.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
I think from.
And then, you know, maybe you can tell us, how is it like to be a designer?
It's because I've talked this with Kingsley and April, and it's kind of like the same thing. From, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, I was interested in art and drawing. You know, rather than draw than play video games or play football or whatever. That's your hobby, and then that kind of crystallized itself for me. And at about 12, 13, when in the UK you have to, at 13 years old, or when I was at school, you had to choose what exams you were going to do. So you had to choose your various subjects. So you look through careers. And the actual career I saw was called advertising artist, which basically meant doing the kind of technical drawing for adverts. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want to do, something like that. And I followed that path. And also my uncle was a graphic designer as well, who's about 10 years older than me. And I knew what he did and what path he'd done, and kind of thought I wanted to be like that. And so from 13, I knew that I had to do these exams at GCSE level, which is sort of 15, 16. And then A-level exams, which is like high school, 17, 18. And then you do, in the UK, you do a foundation course, and then you do a degree in graphic design. So basically everything I did was to get me to that degree in graphic design. And then you realise very, very quickly as you get older that if you want to work in graphic design, you have to move to London. I think it's a bit better now. There are opportunities in Manchester and Leeds and Bristol and places like that. But certainly 10 years ago, you pretty much had to move to London, didn't you?
He did, yeah.
And then again, you realise very, very quickly that you've got to start your own studio. You know, there aren't any. All the good graphic designers have their own studio. So very, very quickly, you realise that's what I've got to do. And then, you know, you get to where we are now, and there's other... you know, things that you need to progress on that, but
this is a bit weird. I mean, because for us, or for me at least, because in Romania, if you want to be a graphic designer, you have to be self-taught. You don't really know which way to go. You don't really know which classes to take and all that.
There is a design school at the University of Arts,
at least
but
they have
the
design.
Very good
take. Really, I'm glad you like it. What about you?
Yeah, you know,
it's
a very good tea.
Yeah, they do make really good tea here.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm a fan of the place. So.
No, you're a PR guy.
I'm a PR guy.
I'm drinking Assam without milk, just the record, and Kingsley's drinking Darjeeling without milk.
I don't know what I'm drinking, but I'm not drinking it yet because it's too hot.
You're drinking Mate Salita del Sole, and it needs to cool down a bit.
Yeah.
But keep stirring it.
And we've got a Toblerone as well.
And
it's a hell of a party.
And chocolate biscuits.
Okay, so back to.
And Longjing, a good tea. But do you think if
that was the outbreak?
Thank
can
you for
go on
a brief word from our sponsor.
Would it have been more difficult or easier for you, do you think, if you didn't have all the structure in place to go through?
I don't know, cause certain things would be easy. So, in the position you guys are in now, it's easier because there's less competition.
Yes.
So, you know, in London there's loads of competition. And it's, you know, something ridiculous like 95% of design companies go bust in the first 2 years, you know, so it's hard.
And 40,000 design students leave each year.
40,000 design students leave each year. So, you know, there's not 40,000 jobs every year, believe me. So, you know, it's very hard to get a job. Very hard to stay afloat if you're a design company. But then where you guys are, so there's not that competition. But at the same time, there's not, like in Britain, there is now a very established, you can say, Mum and Dad, I want to be a graphic designer, I want to get into university. And that's okay, you know. So, it's important that you learn about ideas, and it's important that you learn about the theory of graphic design, And it's important that you learn about things like the Bauhaus, and it's important that you learn about certain artistic principles like chiaroscuro and the golden section. All that, you know, all that kind of stuff is important too. And you don't get that if you learn Photoshop from a manual.
Yeah, so teaching Photoshop is not enough. I mean, really anyone can learn some guidelines, some artistic guidelines.
Yeah, exactly. You need to learn about art and light and shade. And all art, you know, art is still very important. And
yeah,
I mean, you need to be able to draw to be a graphic designer, really. And all
what do you
kind of
feel
things.
About working on paper and versus working on the computer? Should you sketch on the paper?
Should you? Well, I think it's up to the individual,
yeah.
Really. I think sometimes you can sketch on the paper. Sometimes it's you can.
So
you've
it's
got
not compulsory.
You've got a specific idea in your head that
you want to
and
do
you go straight on the Mac.
No. I mean, there's not a
right and a wrong answer to that.
Yeah, there isn't. And we used to say in the past, "Oh, you must always sketch on paper." But then,
that's what I was asking.
Yeah, we used to say that, but then I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, we suddenly kind of said, "Well, actually, sometimes, yeah, well, sometimes, certainly when you get more experience, you know exactly in your head what it is you want to do, and you can go straight on the computer and do it."
So sketching
you know,
is kind of wasting time.
Well, not wasting time, just not necessarily. Like you said, there isn't a wrong
mm,
right
yeah,
answer.
Yeah.
We certainly wouldn't discourage anyone from sketching in the studio.
Sorry.
You know. And we certainly wouldn't say you have to go straight on the computer, you know.
No.
And if someone worked for us and they wanted to present us sketches, that would be fine. Likewise, if they wanted to present us a printout, that would be fine too, yeah. I mean, what you wouldn't want to see someone do is, you know, if they're doing a logo, if they're doing an Orkum logo, is to type the word in, then just you know scroll through the fonts. You wouldn't want to see that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But,
now we're going to change it. Rebranding. Yeah.
Okay.
What about the design disease? How is it like to go
so
somewhere?
Back to the question: how is it like to be a designer?
I'm sorry for the diversion.
Yes, you should be. Sorry, I was just kidding. So.
And like the article says, really, it is kind of like, you know, when you, if you're a real designer and it's inside you, it does, you know, you do choose wine because it's got a nice label. You do choose, you know, products.
But what about the taste of the
nice
wine?
Products.
What about the taste of the wine? After all, you choose
nice
wine because
you, know,
you need to drink it and it needs
no,
you need to
no,
savour it.
You say, oh, it's got a nice Helvetica on the label. I mean, it's not the overriding thing, but it certainly influences all your decisions. Or you know, classically, designers would like coloured stripes or things like that, and you know, and like the Paul Smith coloured stripes, you'd go for things like that, or you'd have you know five different coloured curtains on the wall lined up, or you know, things like that. Just I don't know, just visually affects, or you choose things visually that other people don't see, so it affects things visually, you know. And I do know designers who would walk out of a room because they say, oh, I don't like these colours, you know. Kind of affects
Kingsley, are you like that?
Well, walk out of a room and I don't like it. No, I'm not like that. No, not at all.
What's the deal with Helvetica anyway?
Like
everybody
it?
Loves Helvetica. Why?
Yeah, everyone loves Helvetica. I think
It is
overrated. But
it is. Helvetica is something.
Yeah, and it's a cliche.
We fight against
yeah.
to stop
yeah.
using.
Yeah.
But it is just
tough
such
luck.
A nice font. It's a classic.
It is. It's a classic
it
font.
Always
it's
looks
timeless.
Good.
It needs
it's
to reinvent.
It always looks great. It is probably designers probably talk about it too much, but it just always looks great. It always it's nice to you know to work with. It's, you know that like,
so
set
so
a headline in Helvetica will always look nice. If you were you know. Blind and you lost your sight, God forbid, you could say, oh, lay that brochure on Helvetica, didn't you? No, it would look alright.
So I'm going to start using Universe.
Yeah, Universe. Bruno Mars, who used to be chairman of the Typographic Circle in the UK, says that Helvetica is rubbish and you should all use Universe.
Definitely.
So
yeah.
If you're from Romania and you're listening to this, you should use Universe from
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a huge, great big building called Universe just down the road.
Actually,
yeah.
It used to exist. It went bankrupt in the meantime.
Oh, did it? Okay, well,
I think it's a sign, yeah.
It's a sign.
It's a nice sign. I don't think it's done in Universe.
No, it's
actually.
Not done in Universe. No. Use Universe. Don't ever use Comic Sans, ever.
Definitely.
Yeah, since we're talking about how you choose products by the design and stuff, that kind of reminded me about some things you were saying actually a few months ago. About the design being the new management consultancy and all that.
Oh God, it's all coming back to haunt me now. Yeah,
yeah.
Go on. Now I've got a pre-prepared quote for this question.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I can imagine that he was surrounded by two planners and the managing director from Mary Kennedy talking to a room which was full of planners, and he kept on talking about design being the new management consultant.
Poor Ben.
I've got the quote prepared because I'm going to be at this thing on Wednesday and someone's going to ask me that then. So the really simple way, so what I'm trying to say is that you're starting to see design is almost like a new management trend. So when they call management consultants in to solve problems, business problems, one of the answers is, oh, let's do some design.
Mm-hmm,
and the most obvious example, really, I mean, it's a bit tabloid, but a really obvious example of this is if you imagine a company that's struggling, so say like GM or Boeing or someone like that, a huge great conglomerate that's struggling, imagine what would happen if they suddenly announced that they, say Boeing Airlines, that's a good example, or GM's a very bad example, General Motors. Mm-hmm. Imagine what would happen if they suddenly announced, we've appointed Jonathan Ive to the board as head of design. You know, the share price would go through the roof, which is kind of, you can imagine them calling some consultants in and saying, okay, what's wrong with the business, is blah, 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 we need better design cars, let's bring Jonathan Ive, he turned up around, or blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of what I mean, so in a nice, easy quote for your podcast.
What do you think about it?
I have no comment about it. Whatever he said, I don't know.
Let it be mentioned that Kingsley is choosing the safe side just because he's not on his, you know, you're not on known ground. So.
I'm definitely not on known ground.
What's your favorite designer? Is there any?
Other than yourself and your colleagues.
probably Alan Fletcher, the graphic designer that died sadly at the end of
the big one.
Alan Fletcher, who was one of the founders of Pentagram and wrote the book Beware of Wet Paint and The Art of Looking Sideways, and a new one called Picturing and Poeting. There was an exhibition timed, sadly, coincided with when he died, but the Design Museum of the UK had an exhibition, and kind of if you went to that, it just, you know, if you're a British graphic designer, that was everything you aspired to being, you know, from very corporate work to starting on his own to very artistic work at the end to, he also did kind of buildings and gates and, you know, 3D stuff,
yeah,
and sculptures, as well as paint and videos and, you know, everything.
It was masterclass, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Creative Review wrote a review and said he had the perfect graphic design career. And he pretty much did, really. He pretty much did everything that you would want to
do. So it was an inspiration for both of you, or just for Ben?
No, I like his stuff, but he wasn't a major inspiration like he is with Ben. I mean, mine came more from like record sleeves and stuff like that. So mine was definitely like Jamie Reed, who did like old Sex Pistols stuff, and
yeah,
Vaughan Oliver, who did all like the 4AD Cocteau Twins stuff.
Well,
definitely big influence.
Now since
we've reached music.
I'm really curious. You know, I'm really curious about the music that you guys listen to.
And then we'll speak about Kingsley actually plays in the
band. Yeah, yeah. I'm really curious. I heard a rumor, Ben, and it's only a rumor, that you never heard of the Sex Pistols before Kingsley here gave you the CD.
That's probably true.
I'm still wondering if
led a very sheltered childhood.
Yeah, that's before I met Kingsley, I just used to listen to Deacon Blue and you know, wet and things like that. And then, Kingsley introduced me to the Sex Pistols.
It went downhill from then.
But if you've got any music questions, you should ask Kingsley. I'll handle the designers and new management consultancy questions. he can do the music ones.
Yeah, but Gotti Plains is the band, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What about
your band?
The band is called Passarella Death Squad, and it's quite dark electronic music.
I see no difference between the name of your band and Pornographic.
Really?
I said see
not here. A good album title.
But I presume you already have a logo and all that, so
yeah, that's
you won't
all
be
sorted, yeah,
needing an international contest to help you develop.
No. No.
The band.
No.
But they're signed on a record label.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
This is really great.
From Paris?
They're based in Paris. They're called Republic of Desire. and the single should have been coming out on the 12th of March, but it's been put back, and I guess it must be sometime
beginning of
April now.
And I take it you go out on tour a lot, don't
you? No. but the plans are to. The plans
cool.
are to do it.
How do you promote it, the band?
No, we should keep them in mind for simultaneous.
Definitely.
They're too unknown for me. Okay.
It'll be a lot to do with lights and being very dark. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I'm really curious.
Yeah,
so it's got to be some sort of musical performance.
Yes.
Yeah, we're into electronic music, so that's why I'm curious.
Yeah.
And I like electronic music a lot. Yeah. So.
Well, you should have a listen. You should have a listen. You'll
definitely.
You'll
definitely.
I will keep in touch.
Yeah.
No, I mean it's doing very well. It's doing very well. I mean we're getting we have got a MySpace bit and I think we've got about 57 friends now.
Wow. That is quite something.
Yeah, that is quite something.
I never got this thing with MySpace. What is the thing with MySpace? Why?
It's just like a section that's like purely your own.
Yeah, but
I'm going to explain it to you.
I mean, I don't understand why it's so popular.
Yeah.
Well,
but now that we've started speaking about blogs and MySpace and all that, I'm kind of thinking about your last project, which involves a lot of user-generated
data.
Oh, that is...
And I thought it was brilliant from the first time I set my eyes on him, and I was wondering whether you could describe it a bit and tell us how you developed it.
100 ideas.
Okay, so it's for the South Bank Centre, which is like a sort of arts organisation in the UK, and they're running a series of events over about 3 months, performances, dance, mime, music, a lot of talks, things like that. And what they want to do from that, it's about the role of culture in society today,
mm-hmm.
and what they want to do is generate 100 ideas about that. And so because of that, and because of the user-generated content thing, They wanted a site where they wanted to create a community basically where people could contribute, and they came to see us, and one reason was because of a small budget, but also more because of it just made sense to use tools that people were familiar with rather than reinvent things. So we've got an HTML homepage, but the events and the ideas are listed in a blogging platform which uses Typepad. There's a Flickr group, so people can post Flickers. Post pictures to Flickr, and the organisers can post pictures to Flickr, and then the blog calls in at random 10 pictures from Flickr, and so they're random all the time. There might be your pictures, there might be the organisers, the official pictures. We use Feedburner to display the 5 current ideas on the homepage. They've got a YouTube account, and then again you can blog directly from Flickr or blog directly from YouTube and post the videos, so we can upload videos of the events. You can upload, obviously you can comment on every event, you can comment on every idea, you can leave your own idea, and if the organisers think it's good enough, they'll move your idea into one of the 100 ideas, so you're building that. So it just made sense really to use all these things. You know, Typepad's like $8 a month or something, Flickr's like $25 a year, you know, just to use these things that are pretty much free, but everyone knows how to use them, and people have already got a Flickr account, so they don't need to do anything new. There is a thing on the site that tells you how to use it if you don't have one, but it's been really, really successful. We've been surprised at how many hits and stuff it's got, and it's been really good. The website is southbankcentre.co.uk/100ideas.
Well, you can get it from Ben's blog, it's much easier.
or on the designconspiracy.com, actually, it's on the homepage.
Yeah.
So go there.
So what other nice projects have you developed along the time? I'm also thinking a bit about the one that got you to BBC, which is that was a very nice joke, and I still sometimes worry with it because it's hilarious. And
that's whatbrandareyou.com, which is a viral campaign that we developed in 2003, which is 4 years ago now, incredibly. And honest to God, it was one Friday afternoon, and we just sat down and to take the piss out of all the rebrands like Accenture and Consignia, and we thought up 150 random brand names.
Yeah.
Some are rude, some are Latin words, some are just made up. And when you go on the website, you put in your name, you choose your core brand values, you hit what brand, the button says what brand are you, and you get one of these made up names. For example, one of them is Ovis Ovis, which means is Latin for Ovis is Latin for sheep, so it means sheep sheep. And then the website got slowly more popular. It's on a few magazines, few websites, and then someone told us that some of the names have been registered at Company's House, which is how you register a company in the UK. And we did a check and we found out that of the 150 names we'd made up, 38 of them had been registered as legal companies since we launched the website. So
how do you feel about this?
Well, some of them are coincidences probably, but some of them, like Ovis Ovis, have been registered, so no one's going to call their company Sheep Sheep, because that's obviously someone's gone on the website and thought that was a good name. And that led to us being interviewed on, I mean, Kingsley did Radio Hong Kong, I did Radio 4, we did a phone-in in Canada, we did a radio show in New Zealand, we did all over the world, we did radio interviews and magazines, and probably now, when was the last time someone asked? Probably at least once a month somebody asks us now for a media
cool.
request. That's the one that still gets at least 15,000 hits a week, at least, and a lot of the time more. Only just at the end of last year it was on MSN, it was kind of like site of the day. In fact, last month it was in the Guardian newspaper as a website, so that's 4 years down the line, so it just builds and builds. It's just incredible,
the power of viral.
It is,
Down the line, it's incredible. We'd never done any more promotion than the very first day.
Talking about non-traditional media, non-commercial media in the cab.
Yeah, we were just telling you that it's really difficult to convince clients here that the online media is efficient, that you can really use blogs and websites and a little bit more unconventional websites and user-generated content and all that. They don't really understand how that's efficient. They keep on telling us that they don't get any bit of efficiency out of it. So.
Most of them, that's
right. Yeah. Well, I think that's like the understanding, really, to sell it.
But it's sad.
Yeah, but it's difficult, because we've won awards for What Brand Are You Too, but it's taken 4 years, and no client's going to wait 4 years to get that effect. And you can't say, we'll do your viral campaign and it will take off tomorrow. You just can't say that.
But
no one will invest 4 years. And the same, with the kind of blogging thing. If you started blogging tomorrow, it might take you 2 years before it becomes popular, and a lot of clients can't wait that long, so you have to kind of, it's a long term thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, the South Bank thing is something where it's using the technology, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And
it's
using that technology, and I think that would be the way that you would have to sell it to clients.
Yes. Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. So they're not doing a blog for the sake of a blog. They're using it because that's the best way, best use of the technology.
Yeah.
In fact, the fact it's a blog that is irrelevant, really. It's a website that's updatable and you can leave comments on and things like that.
Yeah.
I
think that Dave Brown said something earlier about some awards for effectiveness in design.
Oh, yeah, IDEA.
IDEA,
yeah.
So how exactly do you measure effectiveness in design?
Because
I'm kind of curious.
The planner, yeah.
I mean, the way, there's those ones you talked about, and there's the other ones, which are the Design Business Association Effectiveness Awards, and you have to write a paper for those, much like you do for the IPG Awards or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think you'd have to say, for example, when Toblerone came to us, sales were X, and we redesigned the packs, and then sales went up to Y, and then we did some research, and 80% of people said that they bought Toblerone because of design pack. But to be honest, you would, something that should be done more, but you'd really only do that with kind of packaging, product design, that kind of thing, really.
Yeah.
And certainly fast moving consumer goods.
Yeah.
It's hard to quantify with the rest.
Yes, precisely. That's why I was curious.
I remember reading a blog post on the subject. Some designer, I don't remember who it was, actually was thinking that they should really, really find some way to quantify how good design is efficient and can help. You can say that, for instance, designing the washing machine with a very simple interface and very easy to use would help increase that. And that would be the logical way of thinking, but you have no way of proving that.
You have to look at the iPod, the sales of the iPod. I think it's proof.
But the iPod is just...
I think it's easier where there's a product like that. I think it's easier to be measured. But where in terms of if you use designing a poster or a leaflet or something like that, to quantify how successful that is, I think that's a lot harder.
It's hard.
Definitely. Yeah, and it's difficult too because you don't have control over all the channels. So, you know, they might have done the iPod but stuck it at the back of all the, you know, shops and it wouldn't have sold. You know, it's very difficult to unless you've got control over all the elements, it's very difficult to say design whether it's good or bad. So design is responsible for this.
We did a leaflet, didn't we? Where
they're
called locum doctors in the UK, basically. And when the doctors are on holiday and stuff like that, they can register with this company, and this company will get them like part-time work, basically, while they're on leave and stuff like that. And they used to send out a booklet, and it really was a booklet as well, and it was about 15 pages long. And basically, they came to us and they said that no one's sending this booklet, or very few people, or they're getting phone calls saying, how do I fill this booklet in? And so we set about redesigning it, and we got it down to 12 pages. With a 4-page cover, basically. And the 4-page cover basically told you, it was all like the legal... information on the cover, and then literally the 8 sides was the information they had to fill in, and they had like a 70% take up on that.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious. Yeah. Where design helped.
So exactly. So that is an obvious one.
Have you done some projects you're not so proud of?
Oh yeah, good question.
Not that we're going to say a podcast, right?
No.
Of course
none
they did.
Whatsoever, no.
So, but there were projects that were not so. You're not so proud of.
Come on, everybody has. Nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't realistically if you're going to run a business, you can't be 100% happy with. 100% of your output, things you're more or less happy with.
Sorry, I have to guide Radu. Thank you.
Done. Okay, Radu's joining us. I was hoping that the discussion would get more technical, but I think the planners and the PR are more interested in the...
technical in terms of software or...
Design stuff, because if designers are going to listen to the podcast, maybe they want to know. That's why I was putting questions about the favorite design, about the influences, about...
Okay, well, we'll ask when they...
But I don't know, I was just... Tell us, what do you use?
Pressure.
What are your tools?
Kings will tell you because he's head of IT.
No, really.
What were our tools?
We use
G5 Max.
Yes.
And
Diana should hear this. She hates the Max.
And we use mainly Photoshop, InDesign, and Freehand. But also, I mean, obviously there's Illustrator in there, but they're the main programs.
Do you do Flash?
Ben does mainly all our like web stuff, so he does Flash and he does Dreamweaver.
No 3D.
No, none of us really do 3D. No.
We've started to use last year we used a lot of iMovie, and at the end of last year we bought Final Cut Pro.
No.
And we've started to use that, but that's hard work. But we
Final Cut. It's not. It's really easy to use it.
Oh, it's not.
We went to a thing at the Apple Store in London. We went to a because like most afternoons they'll do like free like tutorial groups basically.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, they have pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah.
So you can just wander along to the Apple Store in Regent Street, and you can take your laptop, or you can just go and watch. And we went to the Final Cut Pro one, and it was all right to start with, but we were falling asleep.
What was the first? What was the first software you ever used?
Graphic design
software. Was it Photoshop?
Photoshop, definitely.
And how did you learn it?
Know.
Did you read the help in the user's guide?
Yeah, we just taught at college.
Yeah, we got taught at college. The first time I'd ever used an Apple. Well, actually, on our foundation course, which you do before you do a degree, we used a Mac for like an hour, but I don't really remember that. But at college, we had specific Apple Mac lessons.
And I can honestly say that before I went to the university, I'd never even switched a computer on. So.